Good evening and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for sometime in November.
We're back on my phone again after many
years.
Yeah, because the microphones we bought are not charged. And so this is the only window of time we have.
This is so humiliating.
So we're doing the Preventing Grace podcast old school style.
Old school on a phone.
On a phone.
I mean, it's we usually
wake up and just pop open the phone and record. That's what we did on Monday mornings.
And now it's Monday evening, and
yeah,
here we are after missing weeks and weeks of podcasting.
Weeks and weeks. That's been a while. We have not been consistent.
No, I mean that was one of our three things. So we relentlessly podcast. We had awesome sound quality on a phone, and we had animal noises in the background. What was the third thing? I can't remember.
But
we were always there for our listener.
Yeah.
Here we are.
So if we probably chased away our entire audience of one. But if you are still out there, here we are.
Here we
for
are.
You. We're here for you. It,
seven inconsistently. On a Monday night. After daylight savings.
Yeah. But, you know, One of the reasons with this podcast has been, we have not been as consistent as usual, is because our whole lives have been changing. Like as far as like rearranging how we do things, going to the gym has been a huge thing. Walking together 5 days a week has been a huge thing. The church has been growing. It's been great. Like it's been great, but it's also been like a lot more work.
It's so much work.
I know.
I feel like, oh my word, how can it be this much work when we have so much staff? I thought that having staff would be so great because then I would have less work. And actually what has happened is that as more people have come on staff, more work has been created for every member of the staff. So,
well, that's because like, okay, so there's some truth to that, like dressing for the wedding thing. Like we hired more staff and more people came to our church. And so like,
and now we have more work.
Right.
So it is, it's really intense. I really thought that it would, I know it's a silly meme. Like next week things will slow down and you just keep saying that until you die. That's not, but it is like, I haven't had a slow week where I was just sort of plodding through my regular life in months and months. Every week it feels like the world is on fire or like something in the church has to be done right now or
everything will crash and burn.
Yeah.
Right.
So we rearranged our whole lives again, which means we spend 2 hours just on our own wellness every day. Like our wellness regime is epic. It takes so long to go to the gym that I don't actually have time to sit in those massage chairs that we upped our thing so that we can take two kids with us. And I should be allowed to sit in a massage chair whenever I want.
Because now you're a black card member,
but I don't have time. Like I only have time to lift weights and then rush out. And you have so many other podcasts, you don't have time to podcast with me anymore. That's the main thing.
No, I told you before, I have plenty of time to podcast with you. You just don't want to do it. I want to do it. And so it's your fault.
it's your fault. You're doing like hundreds of other podcasts.
Podcasts are really easy to do. I just have to talk and I can talk. Fine at talking.
It's literally...
I don't prepare for podcasts or study for podcasts.
Well, it's just logistically impossible.
Yeah.
So I know we made a big announcement. We're going to do it sometime on Monday, and then we didn't do it like the next 3 weeks. Right. So here we are.
But it's going to be better.
Oh, we're going to build back better. I don't think we're going to do that. I don't know. I don't know what the outcome may be. We have to rehabituate ourselves to this timeless communicative technology. So I've also been listening to tons of podcasts. So I'm doing a quote deep dive on Sheila Gregoire. And
because you have to write an article about
it. I'm writing a sort of, you know, not just reviewing one book, but just sort of looking at her overall content, which is what I did with Jen Hatmaker and Glennon Doyle and Rachel Hollis and Brené Brown, Brianna Wiest.
Mm-hmm.
I've done all the big people.
So what are your impressions so far? We've talked about Sheila Gregoire on this podcast.
Yeah,
before.
We have a lot, but I hadn't listened to any. So I listened to The Great Sex Rescue last week, and I've listened to a bunch of podcasts this week. She podcasts at a furious rate. She has a furious rate of podcasting.
My impression of her, yeah, she does. My impression of her, I've read The Great Sex Rescue. I listened to it on Audible, and it was really annoying. I would have rather read it. but my impression was she had some really good advice, right? So there were some things that she said that were really helpful that we say in our marriage counseling about, you know.
Yeah, so I think that's like, we've had, like, we do a lot of marriage counseling. We always end up having to talk about sex, even though I just try to leave for that part. But I guess I find it deeply spurious when she sort of categorizes all wicked fundamentalist evangelicals who are complementarian and believe that men and women are different. All those bad people, you know, want to oppress women, basically. And then she goes on to give, like, basic.
Well, I don't think there's, no, I think she says, I mean, my understanding is in her book, The Great Sex Rescue, she doesn't talk about, she's not.
Well, I guess it's like all the podcasting is that she sort of has, like, full blown lumped all people together.
Right,
but
she doesn't say, that complementarians want to do those things, want to be abusive or want to be misogynistic. She's saying complementarian is.
Yeah.
That's like essentially, it inherently is. You can't be complementarian without also being misogynistic and abusive.
Yeah.
That's where she's gone now. Right?
Yeah, that's where she's gone now. But what's ridiculous about that is that, you know, for 20 years we've been telling people this basic stuff that she says that's basically true.
As far as
that's
sex goes,
yeah,
right.
Human people, like,
right.
If you thought about it at all, you would tell people this kind of thing. And so,
like you have to listen to your wife talk.
Yeah.
And then you have to also be concerned about her having a good time as well as you yourself.
Yeah.
And the sexual relationship.
And, like,
which
people
is,
have been saying that for,
right.
That's
really not like a new
time.
Thing.
It's not new. It's
right.
Not like, ooh.
Right, right.
We just discovered something new.
Right.
It's always been that way.
But what I found disturbing in her, and I'm not sure, I can't remember if this was in The Great Sex Rescue or her next book, what's the latest one?
She deserves better. And that's about young girls. Like,
right,
you
no, but I mean,
to tell your girl.
But I mean, I think she has an inhuman expectation of males, like, of men. That I think it was in The Great Sex Rescue there. It was in The Great Sex Rescue, but I think it came more to the fore and She Deserves Better. So that I think she wants men to have female sexuality. Like, she wants men. She thinks the moral, virtuous way for men to be is to be women.
Yeah.
With regard to the way they think about sex.
Yeah.
I noticed this, like, not just with her, but, like, with others on the left, especially when it comes to the modesty debate. Have you noticed this? Like, on the left, evangelical left, men, it doesn't matter if you see, like, women walking past you naked. Like, beautiful women walking past you naked, and you're lusting. It's your fault, and they have no responsibility whatsoever. it's not their fault at all. They could totally be, you know, walking past you wearing whatever, and if you lust, it's your fault. Yes, I mean,
it is your fault.
It is your fault. You shouldn't be lusting.
You shouldn't lust.
Right? But
as people who go to the gym every day with our girl and our boy, think, you know, young lady, you might
they have these like weird
do well to put a little more bit more things on. It's not lust. It's really distracting those new things that perfectly conform to every facet of your being. There's
the leggings sort of things.
Yeah, they're not even leggings or whatever. yoga, they're not. Anyway, I do. It is shocking. And yeah, I mean, men shouldn't lust, but you can say two things at the same time. You can
right.
be like, men shouldn't lust, and women shouldn't wear those leggings. Like, it is not her fault. Like, you don't right. have. You're not blaming the victim.
Right.
To and say that.
So this is also about like this because in our marriage class we've been doing there's a section where she talks about how in the past complementarians have taught that marriage is a cure for pornography, and that's not the case. I don't know that anyone has. I have heard people say things like that, but I don't think that I've ever heard that being an official like. So her point is you can't treat your wife as you would
a lady of the night.
A lady of the night, right?
All of our children are here, incidentally.
And they're walking in and out. Which is true.
Yeah, you shouldn't objectify your wife, right, obviously. Right.
But
you shouldn't treat your wife
in
like
my marriage class. In
something
of that,
like as an object,
right?
Obviously,
I said though that if you find yourself unable to be self-controlled sexually as a single male or female, then probably your vocation is not singleness, right?
Right.
So you should think about marriage. And you know, people heard that. I think as people, I probably said that in the wrong way, but. That didn't mean that you use marriage to cure your pornography problem. It did mean that marriage is a remedy for people who are not called to be single, who don't have the vocation of singleness. You gotta be careful because now Sheila Grower blends those two things together. Like in her, like she, her critique is if you say someone has to get married because they have a porn problem, you're saying marriage is the remedy for porn. Marriage is the cure for porn. It's much more nuanced than that.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It's so much more nuanced than that.
Are we not?
Huh? I can't. Yeah. I mean, go on. Oh, you wanted me to say something about that?
You were looking at me really strangely, so I was right.
Oh, no. No, I was thinking about something that she did a podcast on the Enneagram and marriage. So there's a book about how to use the Enneagram in your marriage. And in that book, the Enneagram expert, or in that podcast, the Enneagram expert says, oh, marriage is so healing. Marriage... right kind of marriage will heal you both. You'll you know, your weaknesses will heal the other person's strengths and that kind of thing, you know, like
right.
Sort of Enneagram speak. But like, so you can say, well, marriage is healing. Wait, marriage is healing. Marriage is healing when it's done right. But the minute you go and say like, a young man who is looking a lot of images he shouldn't look at, and then he gets married to a woman, and he directs all of his desires and hopes towards her, and he's cured of his porn addiction. No, that's off the table. We can't say that, because then she becomes a victim of his
porn. That's
what
Boris
thought. That's how it works. So you can say, oh yeah, marriage is so healing. But the minute you say... well, it is healing for young men who should be married, who should never have looked at porn, but they did. Then they got married to a woman. Then they got to be with a real person. They gradually stopped looking at porn. No, you can't say that. That's off the table.
Yeah.
That's what, like...
But that's been
that's what she, that's
our experience how it, in many yeah, different I mean, it, counseling situations. It's been, and so, yeah, so you, it's, I think someone in our, was it last week or the week before last? Someone was saying, well, really what marriage does is heals the whole person. Like, it's sanctifying, like, which is right.
Yeah.
You have to give up yourself for the other person. And that's in the sexual sphere. It's in every sphere, but it's in the sexual sphere too. So, of course, that's what happens. Of course, when you're married to a real person who you interact with and you know and who you have a relationship with, it's hard to, you can't objectify that person.
I mean, you can try,
but it doesn't last but long it won't because last long. Right. You have. So ultimately, your sexuality, your desire, just the way you live your life is becomes more human. That's the dog. Becomes healed because you're having to give yourself up for another person.
But part of that is that a young man who is caught looking at a lot of different people he shouldn't be looking at does have to look at his wife. Yeah. And he doesn't have to objectify her, but he does have to say to his wife or to himself, this woman is all that I have and all that I can have.
And all that I need. Ask God to help him think, this is all I want too.
Yeah. And then you concentrate your desires on that person. Like, I guess it's so insidious to me. It makes me very angry that you would cut that, like, hack at that root that would produce a good and fruitful tree. But you whack it right from the get-go and you make everybody feel bad.
Right.
And you castigate young men and women. And here, hand him to me.
The dog is like, what's wrong with him?
He's hungry, but he won't eat.
He has had, like...
Oh, well, never mind. Don't.
Thousands of pounds of pork today. He's eating so much pork.
Well, that might be why he's crying. Then his tummy probably hurts him. He's just going to whine and cry. Our dog is so manipulative. It's the most irritating. It's the most irritating dog that I could have ever imagined being with. He's going to sit in his bed and cry. Because I'm not divining. He doesn't want his food. I can't remember what we were talking about. That's why I was looking at you funny, because the dog was crying. Oh. And then you were like, don't you agree with me? And I was trying to remember what the conversation was. Because the dog was crying. There's so many things about listening to 7 hours of Sheila Gregoire in the last week that are just like sort of irritating but buzzing around, and I need many of them to land. The thing I just blogged about on Pathos was I'm really irritated that she casts herself as a Christian influencer. Just like Rachel Hollis is in the Christian section of the bookstore for some reason, or was before. The Bear Marriage podcast is cast as a Christian thing. It is, but there's no discussion whatsoever of anything Christian. There's no mention of scripture except in the most sort of, you know, like the people quote scripture sometimes, like usually Micah 6:8. She hasn't done that. She's not quoting Micah 6:8, but that's about as far, if you're looking for biblical references in any content production today, it's usually Micah 6:8 and maybe the Sermon on the Mount, and that's it. Like, that's all you get from any, the Beatitudes. But she doesn't even mention anything. Like, she has a podcast called Bear Marriage, and she interviews experts, and she talks about a lot of statistics and vaunts the science, the quote science. But she doesn't talk about anything Christian, like overtly Christian or even covertly Christian. So that's just been bothering me. And then the other thing I really don't like is that she's really snide about other kinds of Christians. This is starting to bother me. Yeah, she's super snide about Nancy Piercy.
Which is ridiculous.
And Gary Thomas, too.
Sheila Gregoire
And
intellectually
she says,
compared to Nancy Piercy.
I know.
Like,
it's kind of hard to. So, but she says this sort of like, I told him his statistics were wrong and his analysis was wrong and he was looking at the wrong study and I told him and he still does it. He keeps doing it. I don't know why he keeps doing it when I told him he was wrong.
Gary.
I don't know. Gary Thomas.
Oh.
He's written some really famous books on marriage that I really need to read. I only ever end up reading bad books though, so I gotta go find some good books. But he's kind of sparred with her, I guess, and like pushed back on some of her analysis of the statistics. And he didn't agree with her at all. And then so she gets on her podcast and is like, I told him he was wrong. And I just don't know why people, I told Nancy Piercy that she, you know, hey, maybe don't tell people.
Right.
Like,
part of the problem isn't part of the problem that her statistics are the stats that she uses or the study that she based her book, she deserves better on, better, she deserves better, was based on a survey that she took.
Yeah, I think it was self-selected.
Self-selected women answering questions about their sex lives, basically.
Yeah, and I think she does these every now and then.
Right. And statisticians who have taken a look at her stats,
yeah,
has said this is a really bad study because it's self-selected for one, and it's
like the Enneagram.
Right. You're not really getting
like
real data here.
Yeah. I mean, I gotta go back and look at some of that. I'm not gonna stake all on it right now, but she's super snide about people who have pushed back on her, mm-hmm. and she accuses them of being dumb, which, I mean, you did just say that she wasn't as smart as Nancy Piercy.
Just read a book by Nancy Piercy.
I know. I just finished
by
The Toxic
Mike
War on Masculinity.
And I just test
the spirits.
Right.
I also, like, I've made all of my kids listen to Love Thy Body. Like, that has been such a helpful, important book. And she details, Nancy Piercy goes through the history of why people like Sheila Gregoire talk about men the way they do. And she gives a really satisfying account of how we got to be where we are. And she's not like all on the side of men in every case. You know, men have definitely, there have been cultural trends that have been really bad, which I would have been willing to acknowledge, you know, even, you know, 10 years ago before Jesus on John Wayne. But when you come out gunning to just like scorch earth, burn the whole house down, then I'm not willing to listen to your critique. So, and I feel like that if you're going to be really snide about and just super dismissive of people who articulate basic Christian theology, I don't know how helpful your material is. So that's really bothered me. Those are the two things so far. Well, there's more than that, but I also think it's really troubling in The Great Sex Rescue, the way that she talks about sex before marriage is really cavalier. Like, the way that she talks about it is, she's like, of course it's bad, but she doesn't go into why it's bad.
In fact, she says why it might be helpful to you.
Like,
well, she talks about how stopping early, like if a man and a woman or two teenage kids
are getting all hot and bothered,
right, and then they stop because they're worried about going too far.
It's bad for the woman.
Yeah.
It's bad for her forever. And I was like, huh, except she didn't fornicate. And so
that's actually pretty good, actually.
God would be happier with her at that point.
Yeah.
And the boy. Like, there is no God in the picture anywhere. Right. And that's the big problem. So in the podcast, she's talking about divorce, like, this last one I listened to, divorce is really good in some situations. Instead of saying it's justified, sometimes it just a marriage can't go on and that's tragic, but you can understand it.
It's an actual good.
It's actually a good. It's a good for her happiness. It'll be better for her.
She deserves better. So
yeah, there's a lot of statistics of women who report being happier with a divorce than remaining in a marriage, and that's a completely secular stat. Who cares? Modern conceptions of happiness have nothing to do with anything. Like, I don't care. Oh, you're happy, but are you reprobate? Are you going to hell? Like, did you decide to rebel against God forever? Then you're happy.
Right, but
don't be marketed as a Christian if that's your paradigm.
So the whole premise of the her philosophy seems to be okay. I think this goes back to the heresy we've been talking about for a long time, the Imago Dei heresy, right? Like,
yeah.
So, and the heresy is not that we're made in the image of God. We are, of course, made in the image of God, but from that, those on the woke / left side of evangelicalism have built an entirely new theology, right? So you're made in the image of God, and what that means is you can look within yourself and find your true self and live it out. And that it's basically the secular narcissist theology, the expressive individualism of that Carl Truman describes and others describe. Writ large, or brought into the evangelical world, but like when it comes to this, it sounds like she's built an ideology of women are made in God's image, and so she deserves better than she's getting under complementarianism, and so if she's not happy, then her Imago Dei is not being honored, and so we've got to honor her Imago Dei by making her happy. It seems like it's that simple.
Yeah, it might be that simple.
It seems like it's that. That simple with other.
Yeah, it's probably that simple. Yeah. Which is just short-sighted in the eternal verities.
Well, it jumps over her sinfulness. Like,
yeah,
she doesn't deserve anything except for hell, and neither does he.
Yeah.
So they both deserve hell.
Right.
Actually.
So instead they got to get married. They got to get married and have kids. Right. So that must have been nice for them.
They get the cross and Jesus' blood and righteousness.
Yeah.
So it's not about what she deserves or he deserves.
I know, that's
the weird
whole title is, but anyway, also on the podcast, she every now and then will stop and like say, don't forget that we have our orgasm starter pack and our
what
and our great sex
what is
rescue
like,
thing.
Seen, like what is this?
Well, I don't know, telling people you download some stuff that tells you how to have sex better. Like, she has all these sort of things that you can get, which I'm not gonna pay to get any of the courses.
Do you know what they are? So you can write an article about it? Or
no. Oh man, I don't want to look into that, but I guess maybe I could. Anyway, so like every now and then she'll stop the flow of conversation to be like, don't forget, we have our great sex rescue, packet that you can do, or your, great 31 days to great sex for him and great 31 days to great sex for her. And man, I just think,
that makes me want to be a monk. Sheila Gregora's sex advice makes me think I should join a monastery.
Well, maybe that would be a way to get the young to behave.
We should show our teenagers videos of Sheila Gregora talking about these things, because they would be chaste.
I think anyone talking about it doesn't have to be her. Anyone, just the whole subject is so embarrassing and terrible. Speaking as an Anglican, I think this should never be discussed.
Yeah, why do evangelicals do this kind of thing?
I don't know. They have forever. And that's the thing. She hates all the books that came before, like Sheet Music and Love and Respect. And
but
she
doing
hates
it,
all
right?
those
she's
books, but
it.
It's the same thing. Like, you're still
it's
talking
about
it.
Just doing it, like, a little bit of a twisted version of it.
Yeah. Right. So.
I mean, I read Sheet Music. That's.
Did you read it?
Yeah.
I didn't read it.
It's really embarrassing. And I didn't read. Super embarrassing.
I didn't read the Love and Respect book either.
I read the Love and Respect book, and it's super embarrassing. I mean, there's good. There are true things in it, and this is where I think, and you said this in one of your articles. So like, when those books are written, you get this massive cultural tsunami of sex, like,
and so
pouring into the church, and then Christians are trying to figure out how do we,
like they had to say something, so they were like, hey. As Christian, you can have awesome sex. How can we help our Christians have awesome sex?
Right.
So that people won't, you know, stop being Christian. And so, it was cringe. But the whole culture, like, look at the whole thing. Look at just the tsunami. I mean, I'm really sad that Matthew Perry died. But Friends was terrible for sex in America. Like, it was on the sort of safe side, but... They were all shacking up with it. Just it totally normalized.
Yeah, casual sex.
Casual sex. It made it a moral good. It made it into a moral good. It was one of the many things that did that. And Christians who were upset about it, I mean, they weren't upset enough. I mean, the moral majority has been right about everything in America. They should have even been more hysterical than they were.
Right.
And so
the tactics of response that the moral majority and the purity culture had to this was maybe off, but the recognition that this is something to be resisted and was horrible was right on.
And I think a lot of people who sort of lived in the purity culture and chafed under it still don't know what kind of hurt they were spared. Like, I grew up in certain sort of purity culture situations. And people complained and moaned and were angry. But looking back, looking at the world, the kind of grief that kids were spared by being forced to not sin, even if they, like, by being, having the, okay, the law was too fenced. It was a fencing of the law. But... You know, like putting a fence around the actual commands of God.
Oh, right. Pharisaical.
But still, you know, so you can be upset about that. But given the kinds of grief and trouble and horror that people dealt with in the world who didn't have any kind of Christian culture, I think you should be not so fussy about your upbringing, not so angry about it.
Right.
And then, like, nobody, you know, you've been willing to totally jettison that. And what do you have on the other side? A gaping chasm of hell that for many, many people. I just, you know, sure, go ahead and be angry. But also, why don't you not hate your elders? Why do you not hate the people who tried to protect you from sin and death? That's kind of... Like, and, I don't think those mistakes people along were, the way, yeah, those people weren't wicked. Right. They weren't hateful. They didn't hate you. They acted in love to the best of their ability. And you're not better than them. Like, you're not doing a good job, actually, if you've jettisoned all that and just, you're going to go with the whatever evangelical elite option is today, you're not... You should rethink that because you should protect your children from sin if you can do that.
Yeah.
This is my pro tip.
No, I think it's so.
You shouldn't talk snidely.
When is this going to be out?
It's due like December 1st, okay. So I have this month. So that's why I'm trying to listen to everything.
It's for CRI, right?
Yeah. And I finished Scott McKnight's book, so I really want to write a review on that if I can. I was really angry with Scott. I feel bad because I was really angry with him for his writing. He kept saying something new, something more than something new. He had like some sort of weird phraseology over and over again that I think was supposed to be poetical, but it just really grated on my nerves. So...
Well, he's
And he left out, like,
he's a Canon theologian and C4SO.
He left out the cross every time.
Like, he left out the actual atoning work of the cross. Right.
Yeah. He left out.
He talked about how you should be cruciform like Jesus. You should take up your cross like Jesus. You should be. And then Jesus said, yeah, take up your cross. You should die to yourself, all that kind of stuff. Right. But his point was, you need to be a pacifist to save the world. Right. And that's how you're being.
Yeah. So you. I mean, I'm a little astonished. I mean, I know it's out of fashion to have the penal substitutionary atonement. I know that that's, like, not in fashion.
But I don't care.
Right. I'm not. But it's really mean to have a very short book explaining to people that they need to stop war. Like, I was really...
By thinking outside the box. And the box is the scriptures, right? So you think outside the scriptures to stop war. Which, what?
Yeah.
I don't even know what that... What was?
Yeah, it sure was.
Because the title of the book is "The Bible Is Not Enough." Is that right?
Yeah, that's the title of the book, and there's like a brief mention of where the Bible is not enough. Like, and it was unclear to me. I guess I have to go back to that section again. It was unclear to me in what manner the Bible wasn't enough because, we weren't even.
Sounds like the whole book that has nothing to do with whether. With
yeah, it wasn't
the question of the doctrine of the biblical sufficiency.
No, it wasn't about that at all. It was about how Christians need to be pacifists, and you have to improvise.
Meanwhile, you nailed this. He was like, he's dripping with contempt, and loathing for his enemies.
Yeah,
like, for people he disagrees with, not even his enemies. People who don't know him.
People who don't even know him. I hate these people.
Yeah, right.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I know you hate me. I know he hates me because I said mean things about Beth Allison Barr.
Oh, and he's promoting Beth Allison Barr and Kate DeMay.
Okay, they had some kind of thing where they were. He was excoriating a person who reviewed Jesus and John Wayne in a really mean way, and I was like. Given that I'm probably the only person at that point.
At that point, your review was the only one that was out there.
It was the only mean one, so... And it wasn't mean, it was fair.
Yeah, it was fair.
I believe in fairness.
But KKK to me is not...
KKK.
KK to me, I'm sorry. But it was not... she was very upset with it, and so was her followers, and so were...
Yeah. So, okay, well, we've been going for about 40 minutes... So we're going to take this over because we are podcasters who podcast, if not regularly, at least occasionally. So we're going to take this over to Demotivations with Anne and carry on the conversation. And who knows what that will be about, but it'll be amazing. So you should definitely become a subscriber to my Substack. Thank you so much for listening, and maybe we'll be back next week.